Welcome to Data Puzzle, the podcast which looks at the data puzzle and how data is the fuel which propels organizations along a continuous journey into the future. I'm your host on this forensic journey, Tim San. In this podcast, Creating a Chain of Data Custody, I examine some concepts in the airline industry. I hope you enjoy the show. So I was intrigued with a recent investigation of ICAO and IATA codes as a result of picking up an old hobby, which is a flight simulation. I'm an avid armchair pilot. And in the course of flying again, I mean, I've flown all around the world, different types of aircraft, different airports. And one of the common things that pilots understand is that you need to have a set of codes by which to navigate and where when you're in the air and when you're on the ground, these codes have meaning. And so I've flown in Canada, the Caribbean, and Europe, and I just found it fascinating how to understand how these codes were designed. And I started to think about the naming convention for those particular codes and how the airline industry manages both that information in the air and on the ground. Now, of course, I do not profess to be an aviation industry expert, so this information is not represented in that manner. So in the course of putting this podcast together, I did an awful lot of research, but I really found three websites very useful. The first one being the ICAO International. You can find that by just searching for the term ICAO. This website provides information related to flight information. The website focuses on five pillars: safety, capacity, and efficiency, safety and facilitation, economic development, and environmental protection. Each of these five pillars offers additional focus areas. Specific to this topic, information related to aviation, civil aviation data solutions, but I was actually not able to find out any information specifically related to the nomenclature examined as part of this topic. But again, it was just really interesting to see the different types of information that they do collect. The second website is IATA. You can go to IATA.org. That's IATA.org. Now, this website provides information blocks related to airport operations, specifically related to those IATA codes that I talked about. The website provides information on three topics: airline designator codes, accounting prefix codes, baggage tag issuer codes, and location identifiers. So I guess that's four topics. These concepts are discussed in the IATA code section later on in the podcast. And the third website, which was really helpful, is airportslist.com. That's airports-list.com. And this website provides a list of all the airports across the globe and are alphabetically organized by country. For example, Canada has 542 listed airports. Each airport includes information on the city name, the airport name, and the IATA code, as well as the ICAO code. So I did employ some methodology in the work I did for this podcast. This topic did require extensive research and also employed some methodology in the analysis. Specifically, ICAO and IATA codes were compared at various levels, both individually and collectively. The quote-unquote self-assessments of the individual codes sets looked at specific naming convention patterns. For example, first letter assignment, second letter assignment, third letter assignment, and fourth letter assignment for ICAO codes, and the first letter assignment, second letter assignment, and third letter assignment for IATA codes. A comparison of letter assignments was also conducted from airport names and city names for possible pattern recognition. Now, finally, I compared the differences between the ICAO codes and the IATA codes for any code transfer and serialization between the two designations. So now here's where things get really interesting. In the airline industry for airline travel, I've come up with a set of data elements, which I'm calling the elements in the chain of data custody. Now here's what I mean by the chain of data custody. In the simplest context, the chain of data custody means having in one's possession a chain of facts, which must remain intact to support some form of analysis. From a data perspective, the facts are presented as data, that is the smallest representation of information which supports the facts. And my interpretation of the airline chain of data custody covers the following data elements. So I talk about each of these in the podcast: the airline or carrier name, the aircraft type and variant, the flight number, the ICAO code, the IATA code or IATA code, and the baggage handling code. Now, together, these data points comprise a traveler's specific flight information. This chain of data custody must remain intact so the passengers are reunited with the checked luggage or whatever they have, of whatever they have, at the destination airport on the correct day and time. Each topic will be discussed subsequently here in this podcast. Now, before we get into the first data point, I'm just going to pause here for a second and explain what an ICAO code is and what an IATA or IATA code is. In the airline industry, there are two primary codes, code classifications, ICAO and IATA. The first code, ICAO, stands for International Civil Aviation Organizations, and it's responsible for the maintenance of data of listed airport codes. These codes are used by pilots to log flight plans, providing both the originating and arriving airport ICAO codes. For example, the Calgary ICAO code is CYYC. I'll explain that code later on in the podcast. Now, the second code, which deals with airport operations such as baggage handling and other ground logistics, is called the IATA code. This code stands for International Air Transport Association. Amongst other things, IATA codes look at airline and airport profitability. Now, in the above example, Calgary's IATA code is YYC. Now, you remember that the ICAO code is CYYC, whereas the IATA code is YYC, and I'll explain that a little bit later on. I'll be right back. So let's now talk about the first data point, which is the airline carrier name or code. You can find out more about information on airline codes by visiting the website airlinecodes.info. Now, airlines have both ICAO codes and IATA codes. And basically what I did for this part of the analysis was I examined five carriers to see if the naming convention was consistent. I looked at Air Canada, United Airlines, British Airways, Lufthansa, and Austrian Airlines. And for Air Canada, I'll read the IAO code followed by the IATA code. The ICAO code is three letters. The IATA code is two. Air Canada was ACA for the ICAO code and AC for the IATA code. So you'll see that they took the first two letters of the ICAO code to make up the IATA code. The next two carriers, so United Airlines and British Airways, follow the same nomenclature. But when I got to Lufthansa, they did not do LU followed by a third letter. They used DL, so I'm assuming that's Deutsche for German. And Austrian Airlines used for the IATA code OS, which I'm assuming refers to Österreich, which is the German pronunciation for Austria. So a little bit of difference between how the different carriers chose to represent the ICAO code versus the IATA code. So let's take a little bit deeper look at the list of carriers I just talked about. So as I mentioned, the ICAO code is three characters, while the IATA code is two characters. Now, for the first three airlines that I looked at, Air Canada, United Airlines, and British Airways, the convention is the same. The IATA code is the first two characters of the airline name, each letter being taken from the words in the airline name, the first letter of each word, which makes up the name. Lufthansa and Austrian Airlines not only had naming conventions which were different from the first three airlines, but also from each other. Lufthansa is only one word, so the two letters had to be derived from Lufthansa. And because it is LH for the IATA code, but DLH for the ICAO code, I'm assuming that the D is representative of other German airports. Now, I was not able to support this by way of an hypothesis through any evidence investigation. For example, Air Berlin has the has the following codes. The ICAO code is BER, and the IATA code is AB. Now, this may be that Air Berlin is a regional carrier and not a national carrier. I did take this analysis one step further and looked at Royal Dutch Airlines, or KLM, and I was able to confirm the nomenclature that I saw in the table above. For the ICAO code, KLM used KLM, and for the IATA code, they used KL. I'll be right back. Now, let's look at aircraft type and variant, and this information is needed for your flight manifest. For those of us avid flyers, understanding the type of aircraft you are about to board is important. Now, I usually get very excited to find out the type of aircraft I'm going to be flying on and things like the cabin configuration. Now, you can use a few websites to understand cabin configuration as well as a plane's specific travel history. Cabin configuration, that is the number of seats, and row configuration for each seating class is another data set important for understanding consumer buying patterns. However, this will not be covered in this article. If you are interested to find out more on this particular topic about cabin configuration, you can go to websites such as SeatGuru, which provides cabin configuration information. Just go to SeatGuru.com and have a look around. You can also look at FlightAware, as that provides information related to the past and future flights for uniquely identified aircraft. And I'm sure some people on this podcast listening will know what that is. You can go to FlightAware.com. And you can find out then more information on cabin configuration in the first website and travel history in the second one. So let's now take a look at the aircraft variants. So for aircraft type, there are two major aircraft manufacturers for commercial airlines. Boeing is an American manufacturer and Airbus is a French manufacturer. Now, the naming conventions for the airplanes are very similar for the two manufacturers. For Airbus, the models, notable models over the year have been the A310, the A318, the A319, the A320, the A321, the A330, the A340, the A350, and the A380. Now, you notice that from a nomenclature perspective, each of these aircraft variants has a four-character code, one letter, and three numbers. For Airbus, that letter is A for Airbus, followed by three numbers, the first number being three, and then the last two numbers being the ascending order of aircraft from old to new in general. For Boeing, it's very similar. Notable models over the decades are the B707, the B727, the B737, the B747, the B757, the B767, the B777, and the B787. Again, it's four characters. The first character is a letter, being the letter B standing for Boeing, followed by three numbers, the first number being the number seven, and then the last two numbers being in ascending order again of aircraft through the years. So of course, if you're interested to find out more information about either Airbus or Boeing, you can go to their websites. I found a few other websites helpful also for Airbus, ranker.com, Wikipedia, and aviationhunt.com. They all had some good information about Airbus. And let's talk a little bit more about Airbus now. So Airbus uses some additional naming conventions for the types of aircraft, such as LR, which means long range, XLR, which means extra long range, and other codes which are used, but I'm not going to discuss them here. But another thing that I did find interesting, though, is in engine identification, and current commercial jet engine manufacturers do have also some codes that which you might see when you're flying. So GE is General Electric, PW is Pratt & Whitney, and RR is Rolls-Royce. Now, on the Boeing side, as with Airbus, Boeing has a very particular naming convention. So For example, the 737 is divided between the next generation models. That's the B737-700-800-900 and the 737 MAX. Each variant reflects a specific seat class configuration, maximum seating capacity, length, wingspan, height, and engine type. The new 747 class has a variant of Dash 8, and while the 777 has two variants, that's the -200 LR for long range and the -300 EG for extended range. Both the LR and the ER designations are in line with those attributes in terms of flight distance. Now, both airline manufacturers use a form of aircraft identifiable naming systems, and you can read more by going to simpleflying.com for Boeing anyway to find out a bit more information there. I'll be right back. So let's now talk about flight numbers. You can go to Wikipedia if you want to find out more on this topic. What I looked at was the following. I looked at the airline carrier name, the ICAO code, the IATA code, the flight number, the from and to airports, and the aircraft type. I'm just going to go through Air Canada as an example. But again, we know the ICAO code for Air Canada is ACA. The IATA code is AC. Then there's a flight number, which is a four-digit sequence, the two airports, and of course, the aircraft type and variant like we discussed earlier on. Now, in addition to this, seating also has its own nomenclature, row and specific seat assignment. That's alphanumeric, typically row being a number and seat being a letter. This is vital information for the flight passenger manifest. Now, what I didn't analyze in this section is the difference between the flight number code sequencing for a regional airport, a national airport, or an international airport. And just getting back to that four-digit flight number sequence, currently ATC systems or traffic control systems are limited to a four-digit sequence, but each number represents a different part of a flight route. So here's an example about how flight numbers are used. I'm just going to give an example of Air Canada flight AC8265. The AC8265 is the flight sequence. AC represents Air Canada from the IATA airline code. 8265 is the flight number that tells us the flight is from Kelowna, which is a YLW, to Vancouver, which is YVR. And then the return flight number is 8266, and that's the return flight from the same time slot going from back from Vancouver back to Kelowna. So that's just a little bit of interesting information that when you see that on your boarding pass, that you might be curious how that works. I'll be right back. So let's do a bit of a deep dive into those ICAO codes that I mentioned earlier. There is a pseudo-consistent nomenclature with these terms, and by that I mean that the first two letters generally hold a degree of consistency around the world. The first letter is assigned to a specific region of the world. Canada is in Zone C. After the zone is assigned, the country designation is next. Canada is designated as a Y. Now, some research revealed that the reason behind the association of the letter Y is related to the fact that in the early days of aviation, cities with airports required a weather radio station on site. With this being the case, an airport in Canada meeting these criteria would be designated a Y, meaning that the location met the criteria, or Y being yes. In the example of Calgary, the criteria are filled by the recognition of the second letter being Y. In the case of Canada, the last two letters relate to CPR, or Canadian Pacific Railway stations, in the days of rail travel. The main station in Calgary was designated as YC. Hence, the Calgary ICAO code is CYYC. However, this convention does not hold for other countries, and language also plays a key role in this defining factor. So let's just take a look at some IATA codes examples. So I took a look at Vienna, which is Wien in German, and the ICAO code is LOWW. So L is the region code, O is Österreich, which is the country code. Österreich is the German for Austria. W would be the Vienna Control Tower. Now this is an hypothesis, and the second W would be Wien, which is German for Vienna. Now I ran this hypothesis through a few more Austrian cities and found a similar pattern. So for example, Salzburg was LOWS, L region code, O for Österreich, W for the Wien Control Tower, and S for Salzburg. And I also did the same for Innsbruck, LOWI, L is the region code, O for Österreich, W for the Vienna Control Tower, and I for Innsbruck. So while Canada uses a sequence of region radio weather towers and present CPR rail station code, Austria uses a different code sequence of region, country, control tower, and city. Of the two patterns that I went through, the Austrian format is more logical and easier to remember, at least from my perspective. So I continued my research with three more cities for pattern recognition, and I used the United States, England, and Germany. And basically, here's what I found. For the United States, the region code is K. The second letter assignment is the airport. The third letter assignment is the airport. And the fourth letter assignment is the airport. For England, the region code is E. Region code is E for Northern Europe. The second letter assignment is country code, which G is assigned. And then the third and fourth letters are the airport. For Germany, the region code is also E, like England. For Northern Europe, and then the second letter is the country code, which is D for Deutschland, and letters 3 and 4 stand for the airport. So let's take a little bit of a deeper dive here then. I looked up three large international airports for the continental U.S. and came up with an analysis of these naming conventions. For San Francisco International Airport, it's KSFO, and this pattern reflects the S for San, the F for Francisco, and then the O at the end of Francisco. And the K is obviously the region code. Los Angeles International Airport is KLAX. K is the region code, and then they have LAX, L from Los, A from Angeles. I don't know where the X comes from, but that's okay. And then I looked at John F. Kennedy International Airport, which is KJFK, and the K again is the region code, and then JFK stand for the initials of the former President Kennedy. Now, in all three cases, the only consistency is in the assignment of the region code. Beyond that, there's no standard naming convention beyond the fact that the last three letters are assigned to a specific airport. Without knowing the exact correlation with the airport using a mnemonic, this is actually a problem. So I took a look at England, same thing, three airports. I looked at London Heathrow, Gatwick, and Manchester. London Heathrow is EGLL, Gatwick is EGKK, and Manchester is EKCC. So in all three cases, you have the region code of E and the country code of G. And then beyond that, I wasn't able to discern a pattern for for the third and fourth letters. So as I mentioned, beyond that, there's no standard naming convention, and the last two letters are assigned to a specific airport, but without knowing the exact correlation with the airport as a mnemonic, it's a bit of a problem. In the research conducted, all the airports had the same first two-letter code assignment. So there's some degree of data consistency there. I will hazard a guess that the second letter is correlated to the country, with England being assigned the letter G. This hypothesis aligns also to the research that I did for Austria, but beyond that, the pattern is less consistent. Now, I also did a second level pass at the determination of the third and fourth letters, but was not able to ascertain a pattern. Some airports use the names of the locale where the airport is located, but I was not able to conclusively determine this association. So I did the same thing then for Germany. I took three cities, and I took Frankfurt, Munich, and Berlin. The ICAO codes are for Frankfurt, EDDF, Munich, EDDM, and Berlin, EDDI. E is the region code, D is the country code, D for Deutschland, and then we have DF, DM, and DI subsequently for those three airports in those three cities. So similar conclusion as with England. And again, I said that I hazard a guess that the second letter is correlated to the country, which being Deutschland for Germany in German. And also this aligns with the research that I finished for or conducted for Austria. Now, I'm also suggesting that the codification went one step further on the continent with the assignment of the second letter to reflect the country name in the native language. So I also wanted to see if this native language hypothesis would hold, and so I researched the second letter code pattern for Norway, Italy, and Spain, and basically Norway was EN where N was Norway, Italy was LI where I is Italia, and Spain was LE where E was Hispania, and again, that was the second letter. And I did a second level pass at the determination of the third and fourth letters, but was not able to discern a pattern. Some airports use the names of the locale while the airport, where the airport is the location, but I was not able to conclusively determine this association. So the final thing that I'll say about the ICAO codes is that I did not actually do any additional research to see if the codes followed some sort of a linguistic pattern, but I did find out that each of the five countries I looked at had a region code which was already defined. They had a second letter assignment which varied. In Europe, it was for sure based on country, not so North America. And then beyond that, each of the countries used a totally different methodology for the third and the fourth letter assignment. So that's it for ICAO codes. I'll be right back. So let's take a look at IATA codes. As noted earlier, the IATA code is used for the on-the-ground management of airport activities such as baggage handling. Unlike the ICAO code, the IATA code has a three-letter nomenclature and typically reflects letters of the airport city name in the English language. Let us examine the locales from the ICAO code section, which I've already discussed. Now, if you're interested, you can always discover more about IATA codes by referring to the websites that I've provided earlier in the podcast. So, for example, I'm going to go through, there's five countries that I looked at, Canada, the United States, England, Germany, and Austria. Now, Canada, I looked at international airports and regional airports as well. So, for all five countries, there was no region code assigned because it's three characters instead of four. Now, for the first letter assignment, Canada, as I mentioned before, it's typically a Y, and that was consistent with both the international airports and the regional airports for the first letter assignment. For the international airports, there was the ICAO naming convention consistently used, but for regional airports, no code consistency. And for the second and third letters, same thing for international airports, ICAO naming convention for those, and for regional airports, no code consistency. For the United States airports, there was consistency, and they did use the ICAO naming convention for each letter assignment for those airports that I looked at. In England, the nomenclature was irregular for the first, second, and third letter assignment. And for both Germany and Austria, for those first, second, and third letter assignments, the nomenclature was semi-regular. So while Canadian international airports have adopted the ICAO code to extend to the IATA code, it does simplify data tracking, but this has not been adopted for regional airports. The last two letters are not necessarily reflective of either the city name or any other relevant geolocator factor. So for the American cities analyzed in the ICAO code analysis, these prime cities have also adopted the ICAO code for usage in the IATA coding system. The naming convention also follows somewhat the naming of the designated city representing that specific airport. For English cities analyzed, the ICAO code analysis for prime cities did not always follow the ICAO code for usage in the IATA coding system. The naming convention follows a combination of the city and airport naming conventions. Letter selection for inclusion in the code present was, I couldn't really discern a pattern there. For German cities analyzed in the ICAO code analysis, the prime cities did not adopt the ICAO code for usage in the IATA coding system. The naming convention follows a combination of city and airport naming conventions. Letter selection for inclusion in the code present does generally reflect the name of the airport rather than the city name. So then for the Austrian cities analyzed in the ICAO code analysis, these prime cities did not adopt the ICAO code for usage in the IATA coding system. The naming convention follows a combination of city and airport naming conventions. Letter selection for the inclusion in the code does generally reflect the name of the city rather than the airport name, which was the opposite for the German cities where it reflected the airport rather than the city name. Letters selected for an individual city airport code varied from the first three letters of the city name, like Vienna being VIE and Innsbruck being INN, to a combination of other letters selected from the city name of the city. For example, Salzburg was SZC. The pattern is therefore classified as semi-regular. So now let's summarize that comparison of the ICAO codes and the IATA codes. So based on the research that I conducted, and I did actually find a really good website that summarized all of this information. I put together a sample table, and I'm just going to verbally walk the listeners of the podcast through this. And it's from the five countries, and I took a number of airports, actually three airports from each country, and I lined them up for 15 airports just to see if the nomenclature was consistent. So for Canada, I picked Vancouver, Calgary, and Toronto. And the codes, ICAO codes for Vancouver, CYVR, IATA code YVR, Calgary ICAO code CYYC, IATA code YYC, and for Toronto, Lester B. Pearson, ICAO code CYYZ, and IATA code YYZ. So you can see that the last three characters from the ICAO code match exactly the IATA code, and that's for Canada. For the United States, it took San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York. So KSFO, KLX, and KJFK for the ICAO codes. And the IATA codes would be for San Francisco, it's SFO, so it matches to KSFO. For LA, it's LAX, so it lines up with KLAX. And for JFK, for New York, the IATA code is JFK, and that nicely lines up with the KJFK for the ICAO code for the New York JFK International Airport. For England, I took London, Heathrow, London, Gatwick, and Manchester. Again, the ICAO codes are EGLL, EGKK, and EGCC, but this is where it fell apart for the IATA code. We have LHR for London Heathrow, LGW for London Gatwick, and MAN for Manchester. Now, there is a bit of a pseudo pattern there, and that's why it was kind of all over the map and so not consistent. For Germany, I took Frankfurt, Munich, and Berlin. Frankfurt, EDDF, Munich, EDDM, and Berlin, EDDB. So for Frankfurt, it was the name of the airport, first three letters, FRA. Munich, MUC, not the first three letters. And Berlin, because it was a Schönefeld airport, it was SXF. So again, semi-regular patterns to no patterns. And for Austria, I took Vienna, Salzburg, and Innsbruck. We talked about those before. LOWW for Vienna, LOWS for Salzburg, and LOWI for Innsbruck. And then the IATA codes for Vienna, VIE. Salzburg is SZG, and INN for Innsbruck, as I already mentioned. So there's a mixed bag there, no pun intended, a mixed bag of the usage of some of the letters from the CAO code and the IATA code, but not consistent across the board. I'll be right back. So let's talk now about baggage handling codes. Luggage tickets, also known as the bag tag, contains the following information, and you can find out more by reading the full wiki on the topic. A traveler's personally identifiable travel information, or PITI, includes something called a license plate number and the baggage source message. These two data sets provide the required information to track a passenger's luggage on a specific airplane, leaving from a specific airport, arriving at a specific airport on a specific date and time. Now, the license plate number is a 10-digit numeric code issued by the carrier at check-in. The coded sequence is used to associate the data captured by the carrier's baggage handling system to the airport's luggage management system. The second piece is the baggage source message, and the tag has a second data set which includes specific information to the flight and the passenger. The entire data set includes the following: the airline code, this is the two-digit IATA code, the aircraft type and variant, well actually that's not part of this data set but I reference it here anyway, the flight number, this is the flight number of the carrier represented by the four-digit code, the name of the departure airport IATA code, the name of the arrival airport, the IATA code, the departure date and time, which is the 24-hour system, and the passenger name, of course, the last name and the first name. Now, additionally, some barcodes include color coding, which reflects custom status. For example, nothing to declare. Now, let's look at the digital versus paper copy of your baggage tag and some initial pros and cons that I thought might be worth more discussion. Now, the traditional baggage tag is that which is attached to a specifically identified piece of luggage, a check-in. There is a movement away from a paper copy luggage tag to a digital luggage tag. Now, each one, from my initial assessment, again, more research would be required, but I did find some pros and cons for each. So for a paper barcode data, the airline has direct control over that data quality. They can validate the customer data at entry point and have that entered into the system. The con for the paper barcode data tag is that it can be physically damaged. The data can be captured on a smartphone as the luggage is stored in the public domain for a time period at the luggage carousel. That is to say, someone might take a picture of your luggage tag, although I think it highly unlikely, but it is nonetheless possible. On the digital electronic data tag, it contains an RFID transmitter or an electronic near-field transmitter, which makes the detection of the lost luggage easier than with the paper luggage tags. Although still physical, the digital tag provides more convenience to the flyer as data can be pre-populated prior to check-in. The flyer must digitally check in using the specific airline's mobile app that's at check-in. This is a requirement as the app contains data specific to the flight and destination. The tag is programmed with flight information using the airline's app. Now, on the con side, possible data interception by hackers. Airlines also do not control the data quality, and there are more potential complexities related to software updates and security patches. So these are just a few things that I wanted to look at. There's obviously probably more things that I could have looked at, but I just wanted to point out a few pros and cons of each of the paper and digital tags used for luggage. I'll be right back. Okay, so let's talk now about chain of data custody. Now, the chain of data custody can be broken at any point along the way. Now, in the LinkedIn newsletter, I do have a table, which I'm not going to talk through this podcast, but you can go on over to my LinkedIn newsletter, Data Puzzle, and find out what I'm talking about here. Now, basically, the chain of data custody for the airline industry focuses on the passenger experience, whether it is the safety of the aircraft, accuracy of the aircraft departure and aircraft arrival, airport information, passenger safety, that is protection of possessions and identity, or anything else. Each of these items covered in this discussion play an important role in unifying the data required to provide travelers with the best possible experience. Data governance and data management do play key roles in ensuring that there is oversight for such information along the entire value chain, as well as the quality of data captured and the analysis of data patterns collected from the traveler customer travel experience. So to recap the chain of data custody from the beginning of our discussion, the chain of data custody for the airline industry is about having in one's possession a chain of facts which must remain intact to support some form of analysis. From a data perspective, the facts are presented as data, that is the smallest representation of information which supports the facts. My interpretation, as I mentioned before, of the airline industry's chain of data custody for customers covers the following pieces of information: the airline carrier name, the aircraft type and variant, the flight number, the ICAO code, the IATA code, and the baggage handling code. Together, these data points comprise a traveler's specific flight information. The chain of data custody must remain intact so that passengers are reunited with their checked baggage at the destination airport on the correct day and at the correct time. Now, if that chain of data custody is broken, we want to understand what that repercussion would be. And I've actually divided this information up around implications into various subcategories, which I'm going to talk about now. So let's now take a look at these subcategories. So for aircraft information, we have airline code, aircraft type, aircraft variant, and flight number, and we've discussed these already. While airline code and flight number are defined by the airline, the aircraft type and aircraft variant are defined by the aircraft manufacturer. And we're relying on the airline to keep their information accurate, as well as the aircraft manufacturers. Airport information, departure airport code, and arrival airport code are codes which are divided into two separate data sets or codes. That is the ICAO code, which is used in the air, and the IATA code or IATA code, which is used on the ground. These code sets are fairly consistent and work together to provide an holistic picture from departure to arrival. And they're primarily, obviously, they're controlled and managed by both the ICAO and the IATA as separate organizations. Temporal information is the third subcategory, and this is departure date, departure time, arrival date, and arrival time. Now, all airlines use the standard 24-hour system to ensure the time accuracy, and is based on the Universal Time Coordinated Standard, formerly known as Greenwich Mean Time or GMT. The local time is also given. This data point needs to include data quality controls as shifts in time zones when not only flying across multiple time zones, but also as time zones shift during the spring and fall cycles. And note that this is opposite for the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere. As well, some time zones change at different times. For example, North America and Europe do not necessarily change the clocks in the same given week. As country and regional time zone management policies change, airlines need to also change accordingly to ensure minimal travel disruption for passengers. this information is outside the ownership of any particular airline or airport. And the fourth subcategory is passenger name, last name, and first name. Names are usually entered into a passenger name record system as part of a larger integrated central reservation system. If such passenger information is integrated through a single CRS, then the data integrity should remain intact. And at this time, I cannot verify whether all flight systems capture passenger information in the same manner. So let's now look at why this information is important to the chain of data custody. And we're going to do that by looking at a few hypothetical scenarios to illustrate the importance. So in scenario one, we have aircraft information, and the wrong flight number was recorded on the CRS for a PNR, that is Central Reservation Systems for a passenger name record. Now the luggage may be sent to a different IATA code associated with the original flight number in this scenario. Scenario two, airport information. A flight was diverted to another airport due to weather, but the original arriving airport system was not updated to reflect the change in flight path. That is, the destination IATAs are out of sync. Scenario three, aircraft arrival airport. At a different gate assignment than originally scheduled, perhaps another plane was still at that gate. Scenario four, temporal information. A change in time zone occurred asynchronously across different regions in the Northern Hemisphere, causing travel disruption with out-of-sync arrival times. Scenario 5. Passenger manifest. Flight information does not match the passenger identity, passport to booking information. Therefore, the passenger is not permitted to travel. Another scenario might be that the passenger was placed on a different flight and the PNR was not refreshed accordingly. The passenger does not arrive at the original destination airport at the scheduled time in the scenario. So now let's look at scenario six, which is about lost luggage. Any one of the noted data sets collected not being updated correctly means that luggage arrives at a different location. Now, in this case, the physical tag should be updated, but the electronic version will not be, as this is updated by the passenger. Now, at the time of putting this podcast together, I don't know if digital tags are to be updated with changes to destination information, which would then notify the passenger or owner of that luggage. It does seem unlikely, however, that airlines will be accountable to update this information on the digital luggage tag for data security and data privacy reasons. Interesting topic for the future. But whatever you do, do not lose your boarding pass. It is helpful to have a paper copy as a backup. As we all know, this boarding pass contains vital information. Now, I can't recall at the time of doing this podcast, but I think the boarding pass should contain the checked luggage code information, whether from the paper tag or the digital tag. That would be ideal. Now, we do know that the boarding pass contains critical information about the flight. A primary concern are airline name and aircraft type, flight number, airport details, date and time, gate information, and row and seat number for that flight. These have been covered in previous parts of this podcast. Together with the passenger name, the seat and row information of a specific flight help identify a given passenger and any changes in travel information, luggage, routing, etc. I'll be right back. So, in summary, then, in researching for this podcast, it's my opinion that the airline industry data requirements can be quite complex, especially given that the airline industry model is one of the few which spans the entire globe, requiring some 5,000 plus designated airlines using IATA codes, flying through more than 1,200 international airports, transporting 2 billion passengers and 50 million metric tons of cargo in a year. And if you want to find out more, there's several sources on the internet that you can look up. If you go to my LinkedIn newsletter, you'll see the list of references that I have for this part of the podcast. The other interesting piece of information in closing is that after 100 days, any lost luggage is removed from the World Luggage Tracking System. But really, it's really less than 1% of all luggage that's lost and never found. So, you know, in closing, I'll just say that airline travel is a complex undertaking. If you don't want the possibility of losing luggage, then you can either choose to not use an airline to travel on or travel only with carry-on luggage. For example, if you go on an extended vacation and you don't want to have a carry-on or, sorry, a check bag, then you can just find places where you can launder your clothes. That's not a big deal. And also a final point is keeping paper and electronic copies of both your boarding pass and your luggage tags is probably something you want to do for the near future at any rate. So I do have a few recommendations in putting together this podcast, which I found extremely interesting. I'm thinking, you know, maybe the airline industry should look at redesigning the nomenclature for each of the IATA and ICAO codes, working together to ensure consistency across the globe. Maybe it's the adoption of a common nomenclature that would be more efficient than the systems that are currently in place. Maybe they're already doing that. I'm not sure. Also, a global booking information system where a passenger manifest and luggage information is connected across the globe would be awesome. And of course, I didn't really explore the topic in this podcast. Maybe it's a future podcast. And the third piece is data protection for the adoption of digital luggage tags. I think that needs to be future-proofed. And again, I didn't really get into this topic too much. Maybe they're further along than I think. But, you know, I think if the airline industry looks at those in the air and on the ground codes, and if there's some form of a global booking system developed, as well as future-proofing the data protection, we'll be good. And those are the three things that I kind of came up with in terms of some recommendations. And maybe, as I said, they're already underway, and I just didn't wasn't able to research that information. This podcast episode was brought to you by Pan-Canadian Data Practice. Visit our website at www.pcdp.ca to find out more. That's it for this podcast episode. I hope that you have enjoyed listening in. Tune in to Data Puzzle Monthly. That's the fourth Wednesday of every month at 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time to hear a variety of topics in the realm of data governance and data management. Until next time, I'm your host for Data Puzzle, Tim Sand. Bye for now.